Hey guys, it's Carmen Taylor here, and you're listening to Brad and Avery Hour.
Hey, what's going on? This is Master Chi coming your way. And is there an hour you need to lock into? Yes, it's the Brad and Avery Hour, the only hour you need to lock into.
Yo, yo, yo. What is up? What is up? What is up? Welcome back to the Brad and Avery Hour minicast. Brad Bartko, Avery Lewis McDougal, and we are joined by someone who, if you know the CFL, you know his voice, you love Edmonton football, you know the man. He's been a part of the Edmonton media scene for decades upon decades. It is the Edmonton Elks color analyst and from 630 Ched, Dave Campbell. Dave, welcome to the podcast, buddy. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you very much, guys. And first of all, I think that intro might be made for more suited for Brian Hall than me. If you're saying decades upon decades, although for Halsey, it might be centuries upon centuries. But anyway, I've been around a while, but it's nice to see both of your faces because I haven't seen you for a while. So it's nice to catch up again.
Yeah, Dave, thanks so much for being here. It's always an honor to be in your space. I always have a great time, you know, talking to you, whether it's on Twitter or in person. So again, thanks for doing this. I guess I'll start it off. And let's start what everyone's talking about right now is that's rookie camp. And I think one of the, I would say all eyes, but there's a lot of eyes on the guy they drafted eighth overall, Mr. Trey Ford. What can you say about this guy? All I hear about is versatility. You can play in multiple positions. Is this guy a quarterback in the CFL? Is he a running back? Where do you see him fitting with the Elks?
Yeah, we'll see where his trajectory will be. I think right now, and obviously he was repping at quarterback, and he actually looked good, you know. And so I don't think it's it's smoke and mirrors to draft him as a quarterback. I mean, he had a great career at Waterloo, heck, Creighton Trophy winner in 2021, but definitely he is someone that brings more tools to the tool or to the table out of the toolbox. I think I've just botched that little saying, but you know what I mean. He brings a lot to the table when you talk about, and you said it, Brad, versatility. He could line up as a running back. He could line up as a receiver. I mean, Chris Jones has called Trey Ford the best in space player in the CFL in 20 years. So that's pretty high praise. So I would guess in year one, I think Trey Ford, if he makes the squad, if he's on the active roster, I would suggest that because you have the rule of you can dress or have two quarterbacks on the field at the same time, that he's going to be used in that formation. But, you know, there's a lot to be decided with the quarterbacks, but, you know, let's just call truth here. He's got ability. He's got ability to throw the football. We know he can move. And I think this is a player that is going to be very interesting to watch over this training camp and beyond.
So, Dave, you kind of answered my follow-up question to that. Is there a possibility here, given the quarterback situation in Edmonton, is there a possibility that he blows everybody out of the water and becomes the opening day starter? Or do you feel he needs a year or two, maybe as a backup or even a third string at that point?
Yeah, I can't see him being the starter. And, you know, with, again, the quarterback situation in Edmonton is a little unclear at this point, but I can't imagine Trey Ford coming in to training camp and winning the number one job. I just can't see that. And I say that with, you know, the back of my head says, well, you never know. And, you know, their quarterbacking situation changed, I think, a lot when JT Barrett went down with injury. Right. And I think he had Chris Jones had a lot of plans for JT Barrett this season as well. So, you know, I think that could be a reason why Trey Ford kind of went on the radar a little bit more, perhaps for Chris Jones and G. Roy Simon and the rest of the Elks management. A day one starter as a rookie out of college, I can't see that. But could I see him maybe getting on the field somehow? Yeah, that's a possibility. But we'll see when camp opens on Sunday and what happens in the two preseason games, because those two preseason games are going to tell a lot of the story from the quarterbacking perspective.
Of course, I couldn't agree more, Dave. You mentioned, you know, this offseason here, there's a lot of turnover, a lot of change, new coaching staff, new GM, new president. What have been your thoughts on the franchise, bringing in Victor Cui? And over the past few months, Dave, we've seen his franchise be more open in terms of talking to diverse communities, talking to alumni once again. We saw Jay Roberts voicing over the video for the new helmets. What are your thoughts on this franchise saying, hey, you know what, we need to go back, we need to appeal to your demographics and find ways to restore ties to our alumni? I've seen this team have a hard reset, and to me, I love it in terms of how they deal with many aspects off the field so far, Dave.
Yeah, I think it's been a night and day change. One, when the Elks were crushed in Vancouver after playing 3 games in 7 days by the BC Lions. And, you know, I remember flying home on the Saturday, going down to Commonwealth on the Sunday, and then GM and then head coach Brock Sunderland and Jamie Elizondo had a press conference and, you know, kept talking about 2022. But the vibe was just so dour with the city. There was a lot of anger, a lot of, honestly, apathy was starting to set in. And when apathy sets in within a fan base, you're dead. You are absolutely dead. And then the next day, Ian Murray, the board chair, fires everyone. You know, fires Brock Sunderland, fires Jamie Elizondo, fires Chris Preston, who was the president and CEO. Now you're like, okay, what now? Right. And then the Chris Jones rumors came up. And I think he was the lead candidate from day one. He gets the job and his credentials are quite high in this league and they're quite well known. And then it's weird because you're hiring a GM before you hire a president, mm-hmm. which, and a lot of people said, well, you can't do it that way. Well, you have to do it that way, because if you wait till late January to hire, or mid-January to hire GM, then what do? You got free agency to think about, right? So it was a little unbalanced, but then here comes Victor Cui, who, you know, I knew of before his name was on the radar. In fact, we had talked at season's end and he was, you know, wanting to ask some questions and that sort of thing. And I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting. And honestly, I was kind of, I was unaware of his background. And then once it was, you know, it's going to be Victor Cui's job, I went, holy smokes, now things are starting to make sense. And you look at his credentials and how he grew one championship. And then, I mean, I knew he was, you know, he lived in Edmonton. He's from Edmonton. I knew he had a connection with the football team, you know, a while back. And I'm like, okay, I'm not really sure how this is going to go. Huh. First day on the job, you know, he's on our show. He's on Reed Wilkins' show on Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. And I'm like, this guy's energy is amazing. His ideas are amazing. And I think he has brought a breath of fresh air to the brand. And I think he's given the brand back to the people, because that's who it belongs to. We're a community-owned team. I think before this team was community-owned, but the people that were in the building treated it like it was theirs. And I think Victor Cui is very smart at knowing, because he's lived here. He worked for the club once before, and he's a fan of the club. And he understands what the CFL means. He understands what the football team means to Edmonton. And I think the CFL needs someone like him, you know. Yeah. I think he's been a great influence. So, you know, it was a hopeless feeling at the end of 2021. And then quickly, in a matter of 3 weeks, and then, you know, 3 weeks to a month later, you know, we go to mid-January. And then, you know, so that's what, a couple months past the season. Mm-hmm. Big time optimism. And as far as who the Elks will be on the field and will they be able to win games? I mean, well, first of all, they won 3 last year. So you'd think they could easily win more than 3. But it will be interesting to see how they are on the field, you know, because that's the one area where I'm not sure about. But really, when we're talking about the brand and the connection from the team to the fan, which was totally severed last year, was just awful. Victor Cui has reconnected with the fan base. And sadly, there's some fans that will never come back. And there's some fans that are deciding to come back. But there's a lot of fans that said, yep, I'm back.
Of course, those fans who are coming back are going to see a team that hopefully, of course, they will try and win 1-3 games. They will see the return of veterans, guys like James Waldo Jr. and Darrell Walker, to this franchise. Because James Waldo was one of the bright spots last year for this team, a shortened season. He was a great running back last year. He was arguably the MVP of this team, even though, again, they finished last in the Western Division.
Yeah, I think that was a huge signing, especially within the philosophy of Chris Jones. He's going to want to run the football a lot, and I think you're going to see that. And James Waldo Jr. had an excellent year last year, one of the bright spots in a very dark season. a season to forget, but he was, like you say, he was their most outstanding player by a ton. It wasn't even close. To sign Aaron Grimes back is huge. And he's talked about the how the organization and has been transformed, and it, you know, it feels a lot brighter and just a lot more inviting and loose and things of that nature. Darrell Walker, you know, I didn't know what to think about Darrell at the end of the year. My feeling about Darrell at the end of the year was I was massively disappointed in his year and somewhat disappointed in his demeanor. I didn't think this was a player that was all in at some point. And it's a tough season for a veteran, right? And he's someone that, you know, he wants the ball in his hands a lot. It didn't work out with Trevor Harris, obviously. He was pretty excited about, you know, working with Trevor. And then, you know, Trevor ends up getting traded. And then they bring in Taylor Cornelius. And they were oil and water, honestly. It was bad. But you see Darrell Walker's body language and, you know, kind of like he's quitting on routes. And he's, you know, going through the motions and, you know, not working back to footballs. But here's Chris Jones. Chris Jones knows Darrell Walker very well. So you sign him back. I'm going, let's do it again. Let's see what Chris Jones can do with Darrell Walker. And I hope to see better things. You know, he trades for Tony Washington at left tackle, who's not 28 anymore when he left here. He's 35, but can still be a good solid veteran. And then Chris Jones spends money, you know, in free agency and tries to shore up his defense and everywhere on the football field, especially special teams. So we'll see what happens because, you know, when I think back to when he took over the team in 2013, when then Ed Hervey, who was a GM, hired him, that was a better roster. They were a 4-14 team, but you had a core led by Michael Riley and, you know, Odell Willis was on defense and Darius Bowman was here. And there was a lot of good pieces where I don't see the roster right now as good. I think there's a lot of mismatch, but it's helpful to have veterans that have been there before that understand Chris Jones and they can kind of disseminate what Chris Jones is all about and the kind of coach he is, the kind of person he is, and with the expectations of Chris Jones and his coaching staff that they can kind of disseminate that to the rest of the team. And I think that's it's going to be very interesting to see how quickly this team is able to take all of that in.
You know, Dave, you brought up Victor Cui, and I've had the opportunity, and we'll have another opportunity next week to personally chat with him about some disability stuff and advocacy and all that stuff. But one thing I really get from him, too, is, and you touched on it, is that sense of community, wanting to bring Edmontonians back to the football field because it's been a couple, you know, bleak years for football. And I go back to the, you know, the entertainment at the halftime show and all that stuff. So, you know, when you're inside, you kind of get the, you know, I won't say the scoop, but you're there. What kind of sense do you get from Victor that he's all in? And that's the sense I get. He's all in on this football team. He's all in on this city. He's lived here. I mean, so what can we expect, do you think, from maybe an off-field perspective next year and the years moving forward? I mentioned the sense of community. I mean, you look at the, you know, the kids with autism he's working with and the people with disabilities. That's huge for me. But, I mean, what else do you think that's coming for the Elks? And could this be, again, I'm not taking anything away from the history, but, again, could this be another, you know, really – let's say historic franchise, and in good eyes, again, with people that maybe don't follow the CFL can jump on board and be like, hey, these guys are doing good in the community. Maybe I'm not a football fan, but I want to follow these guys because of what they're doing and the impact they're making in the city of Edmonton.
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes back to the connection between the organization and the fans where there is an admission by the Elks that in the past, you know, they won a lot. They won a lot, and they were used to having that stadium full. And the only time they would talk to fans is this, you know, hey, it's time to renew your season tickets. I mean, they had a massive season ticket base at one point. And then you can only win for so long, even a team like, you know, the Edmonton Elks. I mean, the well is going to run dry at some point. And when that well ran dry, I don't think the club they kind of took for granted that they won so much, and it seemed like they seemed immune to any sort of, you know, negativity or any sort of downturn, that they would always just come back. And then, you know, that didn't happen, you know. And when I took over, or when I joined the broadcast team on 630 Chet, it was 2004. So then we're getting crowds of about 40,000, 35 to 40,000, which, you know, to me felt at times low, because, you know, you're used to seeing 40, 45, 50 in there. But then, you know, it starts to whittle away. And, you know, this is a team that started to lose. And this is a team that started to be a little bit more frustrating from a optic point of view. And then, you know, Len Rhodes came in and made a ton of money for the team, but unfortunately attendance dwindled under his watch. And Chris Preston in a lot of ways didn't get a fair shake because the pandemic came. Mm-hmm. And he never really got a chance to, you know, come in and do what he was hired to do, which is to sell tickets. But hey, we're here now. And, you know, I think Victor understands that there is a togetherness. It's not we're the club and you're the fan, right? Yeah. He understands that we're all together here. That's the unique thing about the CFL is, you know, we love the Oilers and, you know, we love the team, but you can't get up close and personal with Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl. Mm. But you can with players in the CFL, right? Like Michael Riley was the star in the league for years, wearing the colors of the green and gold. And you can get right up close to him, talk to him, take a picture, that sort of thing. And I think that's the heartbeat of the CFL, is you get to learn about players' stories, but you also get to learn about stories of your fan base. You know, so when Victor Kui is reaching out to the community and working with, you know, the several different groups, the groups that you mentioned, that's the club reaching out and wanting to know about their fan base and their community. And I think that's something that was missing for a while. And that's something Victor Kui is definitely taking charge and wanting to regain that. And not just regain it, but just grow it. Just make it reach heights that it's never seen before. And he really cares about the people, because he's a fan. He's the one, he went to games, he gets it, but he also understands sports and sports business. And he understands how to connect to fans in 2022, which is, let's face it, guys, the biggest problem of the CFL is they don't live in the present. They live in the past, and they go, well, we're just going to work on what worked 25 years ago. And that's starting to change. That is really starting to change. You look at BC, Amar Dolman is the owner. He's being innovative too. So they're going to see different things out of the Lions this year. So what's going to happen? You have people like Victor Kui and Amar Dolman, and you have people in Ottawa, you know, Mark Goody, you know, their president. And I think those three franchises are leading the charge, and other franchises are going to have to follow suit. And I think we're starting to see that already. So I think, you know, I think Victor is good for Edmonton, good for the Elks, but I think he's going to be good for the CFL as well, because it's going to be setting the bar and setting templates of how to grow this league more.
So, Dave, I got one more for you before Avery wraps up. And again, thank you so much for your time. I'd be remiss not to ask you about the other Edmonton team, that being the Oilers. Of course, they're game 7, and that'll be electric at Rogers Place tomorrow night in Edmonton, and something we've been clamoring for and pushing for. I mean, have you been watching the series at all? Have you been in depth? And what do you think of this hockey team? There was a lot of speculation. There was a lot of, I guess, negativity the last three games. And oh my God, not again! We're doing this again. They're down 3-2. We're up against the ropes again. They come back. They respond really well in game 6. What did they need to do in game 7 to make sure they close this out and we finally in Edmonton get a second round playoff matchup, which we've been clamoring for years, and maybe that team can take the next step?
Well, to answer your question, yep, I watched every single game and quite in-depthly. And I have been – it's amazing how playoff hockey works, right? You cannot carry momentum from one game to the next. You can't. Each game is its own entity. Mm-hmm. And we have seen weird things in this series. I mean, I think game 6 was the first game where it was truly back and forth. And that's the first time we've seen that. First 5 games, one team would go on a run, another team would go on a run, and we kind of saw that for five games, right? Exactly. And I'm impressed with, first of all, Jay Woodcroft and his poise. I thought he bounced back well in game six because I thought he got caught in the details of the game within a game. You know, he's got his mentor on the other bench and Todd McClellan. And I thought he was doing some things that was very uncharacteristic of Jay Woodcroft. I mean, starting Kulak and Keith in overtime was, you know, that was a misfire. So what happens in game six? And I'll tell you what they need to do in game seven is do exactly what they did in game six. Start well, start fast, get it on the forecheck, hit anything that moves, and utilize the crowd. Don't be afraid of the, not afraid, but don't be, you know, kind of nervous or freaked out at the crowd. You know, you've played three games in that building. You know what it's going to be like. I think if this is a chance to embrace that and to ride that wave. And there's no question. They can beat the Kings again on Saturday and should beat them. And, you know, what are you going to expect from LA? Well, don't worry about it. I mean, just expect they're going to come out and push, but keep the same type of game plan in game six and ride the momentum of a crazy crowd. And this is the first game seven since 1990 in the first round against the Winnipeg Jets when the Oilers rallied from 3-1 down. That's incredible. That's incredible. So I think this is a chance for the Oilers to take the next step. And I think they got to do it. You know, they just have to play with the same composure they played in game six and utilize the crowd.
So, Dave, just a quick follow-up to that before I do hand it over. Baby. I mean, Evander Kane, I got to pinpoint a guy here, 7 goals in the playoffs. This is, I feel, in my opinion, this is exactly what the Oilers have been missing. That top six guy that can score. He's that power forward type. He's gritty. What are the Oilers – and you know, lack of money is a big deal here. Going into the offseason, no money, up against the cap, all this stuff. What do they got to do, I think, by any means necessary, to bring Evander Kane back? In my mind, you cannot let this guy go. I mean, what's your opinion on that, Evander Kane?
Yeah, every goal he scores, it feels like now his price tag's going up. That's the unfortunate thing, right? Yeah. It's good for him, though. But I think a lot of this is in Evander Kane's court, too, is what does he want to do? I would think Connor McDavid would speak to him and say, I would love you here. You know, I mean, why wouldn't you come here? But, yeah, the money is the issue right now. You've got, you know, Kyler Yamamoto coming up again. You got Jesse Puljujärvi coming up again. And I don't think you can keep all three and you have to prioritize, right? And I know there's a lot of love for Jesse Puljujärvi, but, you know, considering, and he's had a decent year, I would say, and he's done some really good things. But the problem is if you're going to be a top six player, you do have to score. You know, you do. And you have a player that does score. But what is it going to cost? That's the problem, right? So, you know, you could argue, is Evander Kane the MVP of the Oilers in this round if they win? Is he the MVP? I mean, as well as Connor McDavid has played, Evander Kane has 7 goals. I mean, you cannot ignore that. But he is going to command a lot of money potentially in the open market. Can the Oilers, you know, hang with that number? Or does Evander Kane say, you know what, I would like this number, and I know I could get that number in free agency, but I'll gladly take the hometown discount to stay and try and win a cup here. It's going to be very hard to keep this player. It's going to be very, very hard, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I would love to see it happening, and I think part of me says it's not going to happen, but you never know. You never know. So let's just let it play out. But he has been the one player that has really transformed the Oilers for sure. Other than Jay Woodcroft, Evander Kane has given the team a legit top six sniper that can score any which way.
Yeah. Davis, what are your thoughts on the fact that the CFL schedule has now gone more regional so that we're seeing Edmonton play teams more often like BC, like Calgary more often? And my second question to that, not a football one, it's a wrestling one. In 1 year's time, Dave, will we get at WrestleMania Hollywood Roman Reigns against The Rock to be the true head of the table. What do you think?
I'll answer that one first. I believe we will. It's sounding like that's what will happen, but it does seem like the WWE is kind of going, okay, I think we're on course with this. I think Dwayne wants to come and do this, you know, because he's been wanting to do it for a while, and it's on the table, and now the cards are lining up that it's going to happen next year. Just, I don't want anything to screw it up, you know. I don't know if I want him to come in and say, we're going to do it, like, you know, the day after WrestleMania, what was it, 27, and say, it'll be one-on-one, you and me, John Cena, main event. I think that's when it was, yeah.
Yes.
I will say yes, it will happen. And I think it needs to happen because I think it's just something that would blow the roof off of WWE in the wrestling world. And this is in Vince McMahon's wheelhouse. This is what he does so well. I mean, I like AEW as well, like a lot of people. But, man, when you talk about an individual who can put on a show, there's no one that can put on a wrestling show like Vince McMahon, and The Rock and Reigns would be just incredible. And your what was your first? Oh, the
regional schedule. Yeah, be more regional because now you have Edmonton playing Calgary more often, BC more often, even though you're losing more games against teams like Toronto and Hamilton.
I don't like it. I want to see every team. I mean,
yeah, me too.
You already have a schedule weighted. You know, so okay, you have an 18 game schedule, you're playing what, 8 games against the East, so that gives you 10 against the West. I'm okay with that, you know. And I get, you know, I think they want more value in the divisional games. It's just the problem is in a 9-team league is that it could get pretty tiresome after a while. I mean, we're gonna see the Stampeders 5 times if you count preseason. You know, we're gonna see them twice in about a month. No, we're going to see them twice in like 3 weeks, you know, and coming up in June, July. So that's a lot. Yeah. So, you know, my short answer is I don't like it. Now, if they get the team in Halifax to make it a 10th team, then I would be okay with it. You know, it would be fine with me. But it just doesn't seem like we're at the time where, you know, it's justifiable at this point. And I know last year was because of COVID, and, you know, I think they said the same thing this year a little bit, you know, maybe COVID related, or, you know, I guess I just don't understand why we're doing it this year. Last year I understood it, this year I don't.
Right.
Yeah. I like the way it was before, to be honest with you, but I do hope we get a 10th team, and then I think that'll balance things out a little bit. But yeah, I think we should, you know, I think the way it was done before was a good way.
No, well, it really was a great way. And Dave,
thank you so much for doing the podcast. I know Brad loved it. I loved having you on. Hopefully we can do it again sometime with you in person whenever we do see you again down at Commonwealth, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, Avery. Thanks, Brad. Good to see you again. And hope to see you in person real soon. And I'm sure we will.
Of course, buddy.
Look forward to it. Take care, Dave. Thanks.